This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
The casting directors, they notice. When people care, you notice and you want that person. Like, you'll think about that person again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hard work is super rare and getting rarer, you know, and I don't, and I need to work harder. I don't work hard enough. And so if you can do that and develop a good work, like it's really valuable and will be seen as valuable.
And a competitive advantage, I would say. I mean, just having the discipline.
Yeah.
Hot breath. Oh boy. This is it. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot breath. Welcome back, hot brethren and sistren. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse. Hot Breath is your weekly guide to comedy mastery, where every week I'm releasing interviews with comedy's top influencers. And today is no exception. Our guest today is a podcast milestone here in Hot Breath. We have over 140 Hot Breath episodes, and this is one of the first where the guests actually reached out to us to do an interview. While my guests were in town, they were actually at the Atlanta Film Festival here. Their people reached out asking if we would do an interview to feature the movie. Yeah. So that's just another reason why I love doing this podcast. If you're thinking about starting your own, I did just start an online podcast course. I'll give you more info about in the outro, but I am so excited for this. Let's dive in. This is it. Here we go. Prepare yourselves, as there is only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Elsie Fisher and Bo Burnham.
Bo, hey man, what's up, dude?
Hey, Bo.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Joel,
good to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this Charlie?
What's up, man?
Good to meet you.
Good to meet
you.
Good to meet you.
Seems like it's been an efficient venue for her, hasn't it?
It's great.
Yeah, so pay
particular seat.
Whichever one you want, sir. Tomatoes for you?
Yeah, that's hilarious. And the banana. That's incredible. Oh my god. My two least favorite things. Truly. I hate bananas as well.
I thought you ate tomatoes raw.
Oh no.
No?
No.
You said that in a college interview.
Did I say that?
You did a long time ago.
I probably said I particularly hated raw tomatoes.
Oh, perfect.
I find them graphic.
Or maybe one of your moments is like, oh,
it's hilarious.
It's
perfect.
Welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like the microphones are pretty cool.
Microphones,
yeah.
Only the best. All right, let's do it. Well, thank you guys for doing this.
Oh, appreciate you having us.
Jump in. Oh yeah, I thought, I didn't know if you wanted a banana or not.
You know, I hate, can you eat raw tomatoes? No, I can't.
I can if they're like cherry tomatoes, or sometimes if they're sliced, but like.
The thing, and try to talk into the mics as close as possible.
Sure.
I think, oh yeah, the chairs do go down.
Can we hold?
Actually, you know what? We could hold them, yeah.
That might
idea.
Just be easier.
That will be easier as we're in a pretty spacious room here. Very nice. So yeah, the banana, it wasn't the connotation of the banana, it was the comedy of the scene that was really...
Yeah.
I watched it yesterday. I watched the movie yesterday.
Nice.
And just the emotional connection to scenes that I felt, like the... Well, one in the... I won't get too detailed into the scenes, just to spoil them, but like the car scene, I felt like claustrophobic. Like in my seat, just like, oh gosh, like watching through my fingers. And then the pool scene was another one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where it was almost like she was going to, you're going to slay a dragon.
Yeah,
totally. What it felt like. How do you inject such like a vivid emotion into a scene like that?
I think it's just, well, for those, it really is just giving the scenes time and not
cutting away and not cutting out the sort of boring white noise that's sort of happening between the moments. Because I think it is, when you experience moments in real time with people, that's where discomfort and anxiety comes from. So yeah, I mean, like the pool party, it's like we follow her from the top of the stage, you know, pretty much in real time all the way she gets in the pool. And part of it was just that, wanting to feel like you're really in this with her. It was actually like some of the film was inspired by like VR, like doing VR. Like, you know, I got like a little PSVR, you know, the PlayStation like version of VR. And doing that, doing some of the VR, I was like, man, this is what I want the movie to feel like, actually. Like, I actually, like, if I could do a version of the movie, because people are like, oh, would you want to make this into a book or a television show? I'm like, no, if I wanted to make this into anything else, it would be a VR experience. Like, to walk through the pool party as Kayla or walk
through.
That's cool.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, and then technically, sort of the way you do that is just really wide lenses and get close to her. So you allow the audience to, like, you're not telling them what to look at necessarily. You know, they have their own field of vision and.
Oh, so that almost gives them the emotional range to pick how they feel about it.
Exactly.
Instead of you telling them how they're feeling
and
about
that,
it.
That's the hope, too, is just like, again, like cuts, coverage, cutting into things, cutting away from things is actually giving the audience an out. You know, and if you can actually force them to stay in this moment, that's where it becomes. I'm saying because, you know, the main character, Kayla, she would love to be able to cut away from the pool scene. You know what I mean?
Totally.
She would love to be able to experience these moments as montages, but she has to sit through them in real time. And that's sort of was the idea for the film as well.
And what's the perfect timing of this film is, one, you filmed this right after leaving eighth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is super, it's the perfect timing. It really is like an amazing performance you put on.
Thank you.
In talking about the emotion of the scene, how much do you have to like, it's, because in researching you guys, it's just funny to hear Bo say, I wrote this as I feel now, as opposed to when I was in eighth grade. And then it's an eighth grade girl who is resonating with this story that like a 27-year-old man wrote. It like, how was it kind of fusing those two worlds together? Even in reading the script, like immediately?
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of it came to life and I felt it more when we actually started filming. Because reading the script, I obviously felt the connection, but like reading it for the first time, it wasn't as strong as when we were doing it. I don't know. I don't think the times are too different. Yeah, he's an older man and I'm like, a freshman girl. But like the feelings are still the same. We're just people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like I just understood her pretty basically. And it was just a belief that like she said, the feelings are the same. Like panic, fear, it's the same thing if you know, for me, it was backstage at a theater instead of in a bathroom before a pool party. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the feeling was the same. So, and I was actually looking forward to exploring these feelings outside of the context of my own life, because all I was doing was exploring them in terms of my literal life. If the question was what it was just pretty natural. You know what I mean?
Happened organically. The movie had that feel too. I mean, my mind immediately went to even just hearing the score and just the kind of the feel of the movie was just like John Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
I was just feeling like this is a modern day John Hughes movie, and this is a filmmaker who has found a direction who's really going to like really. I feel like you found a new voice, really.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah, well, you know, the John Hughes thing is like, I remember hearing stories of people saying like, when he made The Breakfast Club or something, people would go like, why are you taking this so seriously? You're acting like being in high school is like being in Vietnam. It's not that big of a deal, you know? Mm. So I hope that's the connection I really feel to him, you know, in terms of, because I mean, his is about another time. So I don't really totally resonate with the kids in his movie just because they weren't totally from my time of growing up.
Right.
But what resonated with me about his movies, and I hope this movie does the same thing, is that it takes kids seriously on their own terms. You know, it says that, you know, Breakfast Club or 16 Candles, it says this is important to them now, and that's all that matters. And we're not totally looking at it from, oh, the perspective of adults who've lived through this and are now looking back and saying, oh, okay, well, in light of all of life's circumstances, this is actually not that significant, or actually the only important thing about being in school is like what interests you cultivate that will eventually become your career. Like, who cares? Like, when we were making this film, we felt like America was going to blow up any day. Truly, like, so it was like, we don't even know if she's going to have an adulthood. So it's really just like, can we make it? And what the movie should feel like is like, does she make it to the end of this week okay, feeling okay, being yeah. okay? It doesn't matter what the adult she becomes, you know, like that's all, she has plenty of time to sort that out. That's what I hope the connection is with John Hughes, that we take kids seriously on their own terms, and not don't adultify the thing.
Especially now more than ever, with kids are pretty much grown-ups. And it forced me to be nostalgic and thinking, man, when I was in eighth grade, I had dial-up.
Yeah,
and AIM. Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
And it was just like AOL. We're
probably around the same age, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 30, so yeah, I'm a little bit older. Yeah,
but
it's the same world. So yeah. Even to get a view through your world and seeing, like, resonating with that, even just from a different dimension almost, but still seeing the through line.
Yeah,
it really forced me to like step back. The closing shot, I started to like cry. I was just like, oh my gosh! It just took me on this entire roller coaster. So kudos to the writing and kudos to the performance.
Yeah, that LL Bean backpack is very special. Yeah, yeah. Like she, I made her like. There's some things that would be taken from my life or whatever, but her like little LL Bean backpack with her initials and like,
yeah.
That's so. I mean, that's everyone I grew up with. Had those like corny LL Bean backpacks. And I think the backpacks may have gotten a little cooler in the meantime. I feel like kids have like. Cool, like North Face and Supreme.
Like
Yeah, totally. They look like out of like Her or something. Yeah. Like a movie Her. You know, it's all very.
Yeah.
But
you can tell even just in your comedy alone, just the attention to detail. I think it's something people are like, oh man, he's doing all these innovative things, but it's like it's in the details. And the same thing shows in this movie in the details, like the book bag or the pool scene, which is about to come out, and then there's like a comedic moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
those little details are really, I think, what makes the difference between something that resonates and something that just kind of peters off. So in even working together, I know you're very detail-oriented in your stand-up, and I've heard you say you spent 30 hours on like a five-minute piece you were open with. So in the movie, what, and this may be directed at you in just the sense of, in his direction and detail orientation, like how many takes would you do? What was the kind of the relationship behind the scenes?
Yeah, in the sense of like takes and stuff, I guess. It's very dependent on the scenes. Like with the dinner scene between me and Josh, that one we did a lot to get that relationship right, you know. Uh-huh. So I like we used like the last take for that, right? Yeah. Something like that. So I was actually annoyed by the end.
She wanted that scene to be over.
Oh, yeah. How many takes? Like, how long are we talking here?
Probably the whole day, 30.
Yeah, something like that.
30? It was the whole day, though?
A lot of the day
was
that scene, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of cool stuff.
The question, did I feel overbearing? Yeah. And
No.
No, but really, did I feel...
No.
As he's directing you now,
answer
the question.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, let me tell you how to answer the question.
Yeah.
No, it's cool. He's saving me from my anxiousness.
Which is something you share, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
But I'm overbearing. Did I feel detail-oriented?
Thank you. I wouldn't say particularly, because a lot of this is kind of about, like, feeling your way through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There obviously are, like, you know, little details, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
a lot of it was very, like, out there, open, I guess. I think.
That's good.
Whatever.
Maybe I led her to that answer. But I was like, I hope that's what the answer is. I mean, I was...
No.
Very detail-oriented, but I didn't want her, or the actors, of course, to feel any of that. Like, they shouldn't feel micromanaged moment to moment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, the whole point is... The way I'm detail-oriented, of course, like with production and all that stuff, we have months and months and months to prepare. But as far as the film and the performances are detail-oriented... My job as a director on set is to encourage an environment where details can flourish freely and then take inventory of those details as I'm watching them take after take after take.
Yeah.
There's a great moment there. Ooh, that little thing's happening there. But not to go, oh, okay, like on this, I mean, my favorite moments in the movie, details, little things, little performances, ticks on her face or little moments of Josh and are inherently spontaneous. They have to be in order to be interesting. So, yeah, my job is really just to create the environment where those things can pop up. And then my detail-oriented job is really pre-production, post-production. But production itself is like you're just trying to make the soil rich and water things and be encouraging more than you are.
Yeah, because in editing, you'd be like 12 hours a day, right? Just like pounding it out.
Yeah, 3-4 months, yeah.
Yeah, and then take a break to direct a small special of just some comedian named Chris Rock. No big deal there.
Yeah, I've always said Chris Rock and Elsie are very similar. So it's just this. I just applied the same thing from Elsie to Chris.
I would love to hear Elsie do.
You
Chris
are
Rock
you
thing.
Are similar.
How so?
Chris is very thoughtful. Is a very thoughtful person and very conscious of himself and I just think. You both are interior people. And I'd include myself in that.
Yeah.
That I'm saying, I mean, Rock is, I mean, he's of course very extrovert and boisterous on stage, but he's actually, and personally, I think, a very interior, contemplative person.
And another thing you guys share was the anxiety piece. And I'd be interested because so many people, even in my life, like struggle from anxiety. Mm. What are some personal, like behaviors or personal even rituals? What have you guys been able to kind of instill in your life to help with that?
I mean, okay, I still don't have it under control or handled or anything. I started keeping a journal, though. That's helped me kind of keep myself grounded. Mm-hmm. And if I ever feel myself, like, panicking in my room or something, I start to read it, and I'm like, life is happening. I don't know. If I feel like an attack or something coming on, I just close my eyes, and then it's weird. But I pretend like there's a feather there, and my breathing has to keep the feather, like, floating in place. Yeah.
Oh. I do the same thing with the bowling ball. I just try to keep the bowling ball. So it's like, I drink water and work out. Uh-huh. That definitely helps. Like exercise definitely helps. If it's bad, you should go to therapy. I should go to therapy. I'm not, but I should. or anyone should go to therapy. I don't, but I should.
Have you ever?
I've never went, which never. Is bad. Mm-hmm. I know, and I should, because I'm like the perfect case for that should go to therapy, but I haven't. I just meditate and talk about it. I mean, that was the thing that literally saved me, was going like, I'm just going to name it. I'm just going to start talking about it. I didn't talk about it for so long. I didn't admit it. And that was sort of the thing that happened on stage. I was like, man, I'm really nervous to go on stage. All right, I'm going to make my whole show about how I'm nervous to go on stage. Yeah. And then it kind of ate itself, and I was like, well, this isn't really helping. But then I tried it here.
You'll get your manager to hit you in the back as hard as you
can. Yeah, I did. I got him to put it out in the open. I think that's the most dangerous thing about anxiety is that if it becomes your personal secret, you know? And that's what we hope... In part, the movie can do. The movie can kind of get this thing out in the open and say, this is an experience everyone has, or not everyone has, but a lot of people have. Or I think everyone has to varying degrees, but that it's common and it's exacerbated by the internet. And it's, I think it's just only getting more common, this feeling. I think her generation is going to be a very anxious generation in general.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, I'm already seeing it in a lot of kids I know. Like, It's not, I don't want to say special because it never is, but like it's not uncommon to find anxiety in like everyone. Huh. Like everyone is. And I think social media plays a part in that, honestly, because everyone is just so worried about everything all the time. And then,
And it's been directly linked to depression. Like social media.
I believe it.
So it's definitely not going anywhere. So what is your goal with the movie? Are you trying to bring an awareness? I mean, it's almost like it can be stopped.
We're not trying to make a TED Talk or a PSA or anything. I mean, really, we're just trying to make a good movie, which means that it just like, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Just trying to engage people in a thing, make a watchable, interesting thing, more than it is like some public service. It more just like express a true feeling we have, and hopefully people can see it and either empathize with it or sympathize with it or hate it. It doesn't really matter. That was just the goal, make a good movie. You have ideas and themes all in your head, but then when you get down to actually making the movie, it's like,
just tell the story about this person.
Yeah, but even finding that story took a lot of exploration and refinement. And you mentioned before in interviews, like having tent poles along the way that you then built the movie upon. What were those tent poles?
Like it was more just diving into scenes and trying to write a movie that I just wanted to see. What's a scene I would like? What's another scene I would like? And just try to build an entire movie out of only scenes I'd want to see. And then when I got, you know, 50, 60 pages into it, started to realize, okay, now how do these things maybe fit together? But, yeah, I was wanting to, throw a kid into fun stuff and build from there. And it was also in writing, just try to write something that I enjoy writing the entire time.
You make it sound so easy.
None of this is good. I mean, none of it, all this could lead to something not good. This story in particular sort of poured out very, very quickly, in a couple weeks or so, the first draft at least. When writing is going well, it feels, it can just be 10 pages very, very quickly.
Right.
And it feels like listening when it's going really well. But that's only the first step, and then there's, a million, slamming your head, things going totally south and questioning everything.
Just in the writing process alone?
Not totally in the writing process. Once the writing itself is viewed in light of production and as a reality, you know what I mean? And it's not just a fun little script you have, but now it's the thing that's actually going to be made. It needs to be feasibly made. And then it aligns with the culture, and then you're looking at the cultural moment, which is obviously pretty high right now, and going, wait, is this going to be interpreted this way? Is this going to be seen that way? Mm-hmm. I'm a man making a story about young girls. There's a lot of stuff to worry about, understandably and probably correctly. There's a whole different thing between a nice little idea of a thing that you finished on the paper for yourself and actually having to birth something into the world, which is much scarier.
Well, clearly having Scott Rudin behind it, he's pretty much like the LeBron of movie producers.
Yes.
Like, he's the guy. So clearly there was something on the page that resonated.
Scott, I think it just seemed... Scott would use the word authoritative, which I think was nice. Or he just felt like it was confidently itself or something. I don't know. I mean, But I think that's... I think it was just a nice little self-contained thing that sort of was going for some... I'm being forced to describe how my own script is cool. I have no idea.
I don't know. I'm just really talented and good and a prodigy.
Exactly.
I don't know how else to sum up my talent, man.
Yeah, exactly. I need 20 minutes to be able to even scratch the surface of my ability.
Well, you guys have been doing interviews all day, so I appreciate you doing this. But
yeah, of course.
A lot of what my podcast is about is just learning. A lot of my listeners are really into learning and the behind the scenes, and I'm very detail oriented as well. And not only if it's my podcast or my stand up or my writing, I'm detail oriented as well. So it's cool to see other people that are detail oriented, and we all have a different process, but we're all trying to get to the same destination, which is to make a quality piece of work.
Yeah.
So even in getting more on the informative side, the audition process, I know you had to audition a couple times, and a lot of my listeners are comedians or actors as well, so I would love insight into the audition process, maybe from the actor side and how you approach it and what you've learned from auditioning, and maybe from the director side and what you're looking for in auditions.
Do you just mean like in general or with this specifically?
Yeah, with your personal experience as an actor in the world. I know you did like Despicable Me.
Okay.
On that side, but you could relay it to Beau's audition process if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I just kept going for it, I guess. Because especially now that I'm a teenager, it's a little harder for me to get stuff because I'm not what a lot of people are looking for. And even if I am, they could cast some 18-year-old who can play me, in their eyes for longer and maybe better.
Even your high school or your theater teacher will say no.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fine.
It's just about, keep going out there, and it gets depressing a little bit if you're not getting stuff, but whatever. It was really nice when I came to the audition for this, though, because I remember, I dropped my script like immediately, and like Bo was just chill with it. Whereas I went into an audition for some show after that, and on my headshot, I didn't have my acne as much. And they're like, "Oh, where's all the acne?"
They said that out loud.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know. Isn't it insane?
But yeah, no.
The
like
worst. I mean, like the worst people ever.
Oh, basically.
Wow.
It was really nice to audition for this though, because like there was a little bit of freedom and like improv-ish stuff, and it was just really genuinely fun, and I liked the project. And that's like the goal for anyone auditioning. I mean, obviously, aside from getting stuff, is to definitely find a connection with what you're doing.
How do you prepare?
I don't know. I mean, just memorize the lines and try to get a feel for them and see what. Like, it's all about feeling for me. I it's hard for me to think about it too much, because if I think about it, I start getting anxious, and then, yeah.
Oh, because even in this movie, like, you would get the script, like, day of, right?
Yeah.
Bo would almost, like, throw it to you
day
of.
I only got to read the script once full through, or, like, all the way through, and then I would get it day of for the lines. I think it really played into my performance, so it kept it fresh in my head.
What were you still able to, are you a director who's like verbatim, this is it? So that gave the freedom to play.
Yeah, no, I mean, especially for this, it's about trying to capture the way kids articulate themselves. So it has to sort of exist on the sort of horizon of their thoughts. So they should be grasping for the words and barely getting them. But it was pretty close. I mean, it was across the board much less. It was not improvised.
Sorry,
it was
just to bore like, you here.
No.
You can throw yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Give her a Red Bull.
I get it.
We need to get these kids on Red Bull.
Bo's just talking for too long now.
Well, this is get used to it. I sit there for 90 minutes and listen to you.
Gucci.
Yeah, it's... and for, as far as actors... Was that the question, what they should look like in an audition? Oh, what they should do in an audition?
Well, I was asking her from the actor side, yeah, and then from the director side, what your audition was. Like, how you're looking from a director side.
I mean, everyone's got different things. I mean, I'm just looking for natural specificity, so not put-on specificity.
What do you mean by that?
Someone that is a particular person. Yeah, exactly. Naturally. someone that is just something particular. Dispositionally or expressively, but not put on. I'm kind of just trying to know them through the scene more than I'm trying to get, like, do they have a great take on this scene?
So they make a choice.
And I'm,
they
but
commit.
I'm trying, they just are. And gotcha. I'm trying to actually, if I feel them making choices, I don't like it. Usually. I'm trying to just kind of get to know them. I wanted to tell people, like, you should know the pressure's off because it's so personal. Like the pressure's off because your ability to get this role is actually kind of out of your hands, because you just got to be right for it. You got to feel right. You got to look kind of right. So don't worry. Like, just be yourself, and you're either going to be right for it or not. But also just to be alive and be specific and maybe take a risk, but I don't know. Acting is a beautiful thing, a beautiful, raw, strange, weird thing. And it should, I think it should be taken seriously if you're going to do it. You know, if you want to do it, take it seriously as a craft. Come prepared. It makes a huge difference.
Ooh.
It makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, anyone that's like looking at, like that is a, you're almost, you're like not getting it if you're looking at your lines. Like really, like you, or the people that do get it 90% of the time are off book. And it isn't just because like, oh, you chose your professional. Like, you got to be there. Like, show me what you can, like, you're not showing me how you act if you're glancing at this thing. Like,
right.
So I would say that, but that's just for me. I mean, that's if you want to be in a small indie movie and make SAG minimum.
Yeah, it's right now it's a small indie movie, but
yeah, I would just say, yeah, do it. You know what I mean? Do it. Like, because I'm saying I'm as a comedian doing it, but like, and I would know comedians would be like, I got this audition, you know, they like don't want to take it seriously because it's like not cool, or like
right.
Commit to it.
Yeah,
like, across the board, like try, commit. It sometimes like feels like not cool to try, but like try,
yeah, definitely
try, commit, go for it. Memorize, care about the audition, and don't get the part and be bummed about it. It's beautiful.
But that's easy. And even just the preparation point is something that's so overlooked now. And it can evolve back into just like the story of the movie or even just culture and how it's more of like a microwave culture now.
Yeah.
And everything is just like McDonald's as opposed to really letting stuff ferment and appreciate and let it learn. Like your hour specials, you'll spend 3 years developing one. Mm-hmm. As you know, it became the system. Well, you gotta do an hour a year, hour a year. It's like, all right, we'll see how that turns out for you.
Yeah, some people are the Beatles that can do that. Maybe, you know, Bill Burr is that now or something. I don't even know if he's even doing that. But most people aren't. You know, if you have that, if your output is screaming for that much, great. You know, but it's hilarious. Like the two people I'm thinking are Woody and Louie, and it's like, oh my God.
I know. So it's tough to make those references.
It's just hilarious. Yeah, like maybe. Maybe we should look into people with high output.
Anybody excelling? You have high output, so I don't know.
I don't. I don't think I do. You know, my Twitter feed doesn't. Everyone's tweeting at me, "Are you dead?" So they don't think I'm high output. But I think you're right about it. Just more, just like it's very cool to just like not go for it and not care, and you should care. It's just so funny, like, out in L.A. when everyone's like, I don't give a shit. I'm going on the auditions, so who cares? I'm like, you moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, cat's out of the bag. You care.
Yeah.
You're a dreamer. I'm sorry. Like, you're from Nebraska. Why are you here? Like, you know, so,
just
like,
to not care in a better climate.
Exactly. So, and, like, to circle back to the auditions, like, the casting directors, they notice. When people care, you notice, and you want that person. Like, you'll think about that person again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hard work is super rare and getting rarer, you know? And I don't, and I need to work harder. I don't work hard enough. And so if you can do that and develop a good work, like, it's really valuable and will be seen as valuable.
And a competitive advantage, I would say. Even just having the discipline.
Yeah.
Is that, we're talking about from, like, the grown-up world, but even in your world more, is that almost the attitude of people your age now, too, is almost the higher sense of entitlement and, like, in class, like, oh, I didn't study.
Oh, for sure. Like, and I don't know if I live in a rich area, but it's obviously well off, I guess. It's
not
a nice area.
Yeah, it's
but
nice. It's not.
No one there knows manners.
It's been
funny, though. Sorry. Swear to God.
We don't come from this road. Neither of us are from.
I came from a mountain town. Okay.
Yeah.
I grew up in the literal mountains, so.
Where at?
Do you know Palm Springs?
In Florida?
Nope.
That's not the one I know.
It's in California. It's a tourist town. It's really cool.
Oh, they plucked you there to put you in
a
Hallmark
Palm Springs,
commercial.
It's a mountain about 300 miles north of Palm Springs. That's where she was.
Yes.
Oh, fancy.
Anyways, so no, I mean, I live in a well-off area now, and it's just every kid there is just, it's so annoying how much people just don't understand that you, I'm getting mad.
Oh, wow.
But, like, everyone is so entitled. It's so rare to find the good few.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
the Marines?
Yes.
Yeah.
This guy. You should do comedy again, man.
I keep getting told that.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it applies to the acting world. I don't have a lot of acting friends, at least my age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Good,
yeah.
I don't know.
It keeps you normal.
I suppose. But I mean, I can be normal
Whatever
and have acting
is,
friends.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyways, I'm just.
I don't know if you could be normal of acting friends. Maybe like friends that like to act. But I'm saying like child actors that are all like in movies. Like that's a weird group.
I mean, it's a weird group, but that I don't know. Is anyone normal?
Yeah,
that's
you know what?
The question.
I don't want to keep you away
subjective.
From anybody. You go
yeah.
for it. You
well,
I mean,
Burnham is telling you what's normal. Okay,
exactly,
that's,
yeah.
you got to like, take that.
maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it as much as in the acting world. But then and again, I don't have. Much of a view on it, I suppose. I don't know. But especially with kids my age.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I don't know if it's everywhere. I think it is, though. It's like, mind-blowing how these people just have... No, I'm just... This is something I think about so much because people just make me mad because they don't care about anything. Like, especially the boys at my school, they do nothing for work. Like, They have no career ahead of them except for McDonald's. You know, you go if that's your dream, but like, takes like maybe an hour to do your homework. Just do it, buddy. Just do it.
Yeah, well, read some Jordan Peterson, boys. Get out there.
Yeah, read some Jordan Peterson.
You're not all going to be, you know, famous Terrence Fortnite players on YouTube. Yeah. You're not all going to be the next LeBron James.
Yeah. That's what's so funny and even so time about this movie is being famous is a career path now. That's almost like you ask a kid what they want to be. It's not like a doctor.
Yeah, it was,
it's
it like was a thing YouTube was star, 60%, right? Of, they did some study like 7 years ago. And it was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And most kids answered famous.
Aww. The one I don't like is kids are answering YouTube. Like, that, in my opinion, that's almost worse than famous. Because no offense to any YouTubers. I appreciate the website. But, like, to, like, you have to, like, YouTube is a career. And it gives back to the community in some ways. But that shouldn't be something you're aiming for. Like, you should aim for something with substance because YouTube has become such a...
Yeah, YouTube is a...
It's a business now, and it's not fun to do, and no one's creating anything of worth.
No, but they're all insane, like, filming their own lives, walking around, being like, today we filled a kiddie pool with Jell-O, and I brought my friend with a mohawk over.
No, exactly. And, like, the fact that people aspire to do that for their entire life is so...
It's like I filled my dad's closet with Milk Duds. It's like, yeah, and why?
And another thing is like kids want to do that as a career, but after a certain point, you have to stop. You can't just do that forever.
There's some people that do it. There's some cool educational
stuff. Oh, for sure, or whatever. But I mean, like the type of YouTuber everyone's trying to be
is crazy.
You can't do that forever. You have to make.
It's like Airbnb a mansion and like scream at people.
Yeah, exactly. On the street. I don't know.
But even that stuff requires a work ethic. People don't understand until they get into it.
They don't even want to have.
Oh, but they're hardworking. I mean, Jake Paul's working his butt. They're busy.
Hard,
they're busy.
Dude.
They're just
a full-time job. Devil.
But like. People.
Well, obviously, I mean, he's the worst.
But whatever. You sparked all this, Bo. You and your piano at 16 with a camera on a pile of books.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, maybe it was them. I don't know.
It's evolved so much.
And then, what is he? I mean, he like did the Suicide Forest thing, and then he comes back the next day with the whole thing on suicide prevention.
I know.
It's beyond
YouTube
parody.
Is
it's
gross
beyond
to
parody.
Me now.
But even now, you look at like they're like, oh, the viral videos, and then it's by NBC or by.
Oh,
like,
oh yeah, it's bullshit. No. It's literally the viral videos of the day are trailers and Tonight Show clips and.
Yeah.
And it's hell. It's a lot. Like a little kid in his bedroom making funny songs that I was never would have worked now.
There's so many people doing it, and you stumble across them, and you're like, oh, that person's great.
But they all vlog and they make music videos and they're musicians and they have their merch and
I don't get how vlogs are so popular. I can't sit through them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like I follow people and it's like I've come here for your content and you're like, watch me make a peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Watch me walk my four dogs.
I know.
You sound like old married couple right now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
These kids and their Wi-Fi.
I know. I feel that way. Well, I just feel like, come on. I mean, there are good people. There's like the, I'm saying there's like, there's a lot. There's some YouTubers on there that vlog about like Boogie vlogs, and I like him a lot, and his stuff is personal and feels insightful. And there are
some people who are really using the medium.
We
to
know
its
who
finest.
We're talking about. It's those insane people that are crazy that like all like live in the same place, and they go over and they're like 19, and they throw like cream pies in each other's face. They're like, John. It's like, what? And they're all like vaguely hooking up with each other. And then
it's okay. You can say
there's
Team
no
10.
Hair on their. Like, what is it? Team 10? I don't even know these people.
I'm sad I do. Whatever.
It's crazy. I just know how sad they will be when they are judged by the Lord.
They're judged by the Lord.
It's not going to go well.
How are you guys even in the movie promotion side? You said some of the top videos are trailers or whatnot, and we are more connected than ever. And it's cool. You're actually two things that I can tell just from what you said today that this is not just a flash in the pan as far as your vision and your overall career. Is one, you said you shot the movie as if it were going to be VR. which is that's the future. That's where it's headed. It's something people can't wrap their mind around right now, but that's going to become the norm. It's just that experience and entertainment.
Yeah.
And you're tapping into podcasting. You're using podcasting as a way to promote this film, which is on a boom right now. Podcasting is on a boom right now.
Uh-huh.
So in promoting this movie, how are you kind of staying out of the noise in that sense and getting lost in the current?
In what sense?
Well, we're talking about YouTube and how it's a bunch of just like curated like content that people are paying to have in front of you. How are you getting the word of this movie out that may be a little more unorthodox?
Oh.
Whoa. Wow, that was quite a...
People can watch it, people can not, you know what I mean? I'm saying I'll just talk about it honestly, and if people want to see it, great. If people don't, you know, that's all right. We had fun.
Yeah.
And we'll try to do some creative stuff, but I don't know, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of thinking is the thinking that hopefully the movie's almost slightly an antidote to or something. You know what I mean? Not just to only think about, I don't know, like at a certain point, all the internet is a bunch of people trying to figure out how to be fresh on the internet, and I'm just going.
Yes,
here's my movie. You know?
Here, with my YouTube money, it's very easy to be like, you have YouTube money.
But yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, when you're rolling in YouTube money. Yes, yes, yes.
You were an early adopter, like Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm rolling in my YouTube money.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this could very well be noise. We're saying right now. I'm saying I'm just trying. I think people can sniff out when you're trying to, I don't know, twist something original so that your promotion goes down as something other than promotion. And we're going. This is promote. You want to see this thing? Does this sound like a cool movie to see or not? Right. You know, it either does or it doesn't.
And that can almost be a breath of fresh air in us discussing. People are creating content not for the sake of content, but for the sake of satisfying someone other than themselves. Like, what will these people like?
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to being like, what will I like? Mm. And then in turn, that'll gravitate in just an organic following, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that's exactly how I've done things or tried to. Just going like, this is something I think would be cool. And then hopefully there are people like me that share that thing.
Yeah. I don't know. People shouldn't create content for audiences, I guess. I mean, they can, but, like, create stuff that makes you happy.
Boom.
Because, like, what's the point of doing stuff if it doesn't make you happy? You know?
Well, for, gold.
What?
For gold, for blood.
But don't those things, like,
make you happy?
Yeah, see?
The feeling of gold and blood in my hands.
Yeah.
It's true.
Gold in one. Jar of blood in the other.
Jar.
Happy life.
Yeah, good.
Wow, you guys are like one and the same.
We really are.
So it's creepy, but we're basically the twins from The Shining.
Yeah.
Whoa, I just like you know I'm that reference. That's amazing. Thank you. She knows The Shining.
She knows it from Ready Player One. That's her.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen Ready Player One?
Yeah.
I thought that was incredible, that scene. I didn't.
I like the hotel part. Yeah, that was
cool. I thought that was crazy.
Do you know who John Hughes is? Do you know John Hughes films?
I've heard the name. I'm not that cool, though.
No, you're very cool.
No, it wouldn't make sense. I think it'd be. I don't know why it would.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's weird because a lot of the movies aimed at kids now are just sort of reused. And I think John Hughes was talking about something very relevant to kids in the 80s. And, of course, there's a timeless quality to it. But, like, I just don't think it's the – I don't think the – pain of kids now is grounded in the same place that it was back then, which was back then it seems to have been grounded in how do you fit into the hierarchy of high school and how do you deal with your parents.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And now I think it's much more internal or something. Maybe.
Because we're like pretty much living on the internet.
Yeah.
So we're almost our own publicist in a way, where every day we're having to update our lives to entertain people or inform people. Like, are you with school? Do you status updates of like big test today? Like, is that?
Nah.
I'm not on kid Facebook. I don't know. I'm not a kid. You're.
I the only ones superstar. I use are Instagram and Twitter, mostly because I feel like I'm supposed to.
Yeah. Nobody's on. Was that a line in the movie? Nobody. Yeah, I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had written Facebook
Perfect.
Into the script, and it was just I showed up, and all the kids were like, "We don't use Facebook." And I was
like,
yes. So I had to change all of the messages to Instagram DMs.
Gotta keep up with the times, Burnham.
Nice.
I don't know. I I try to only use like my Twitter for tweeting stuff I think is funny, and my Instagram for pics of my plants and my dogs. I don't understand how people feel the. I mean, I get it, but like the fact that people feel the need to be like taking a breath, taking another breath, like that is, I don't know. I don't. Whatever.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also inspiring to hear somebody at your age feeling this way. Because me just looking from afar, I'm like, oh, they're all just in this and so absorbed. Yeah, yeah, but yeah. There's wisdom in there.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, and I think a lot of them feel more like she does than I think you even realize too, Elsie. You know what I mean? I think a weird part of the internet is that, especially being young on it, you feel like you're the only one that thinks this is BS.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But like a lot of the other, you know what I mean? Like, I think everyone is going like,
in a weird way, that literally directly relates to the movie because it's about feeling something you think no one else is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
But it's like, I bet a lot of those kids posting annoying stuff also are like, I can't believe I have to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what I mean? I think everyone's like, there's very few people that are... Mm-hmm. But maybe they are. Maybe they
maybe.
Are.
Maybe. I mean, but
you see a lot of excited kids.
I deal with this like every day. Yeah, right. And it's like, they're not sad about posting a selfie every 20 seconds. Yeah, they're like,
Yeah.
You couldn't tell what I stuck my tongue out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
They'll do 30 takes of those photos. Like, yeah. 30 takes of selfies.
It's a lot of space.
The funniest thing is to watch someone take a picture like right on the Instagram story picture and then they don't like it and they have to redo it. They can't just keep taking. That's funny.
Is that? I don't know.
Like with the Instagram story, you take a picture and that's, you can't just keep taking. Like if you take it, it goes ready to post.
So you have to start over again.
Yeah. So it's funny watching people just do that over and over.
Do you find in creativity that it's almost the more personal, the more universal it becomes?
Probably not, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm saying I wish that was the truth, but like the most universal stuff seems to be Star Wars and Deadpool right now. You know what I mean? I'm saying so. I don't know if those are incredibly specific. Like the
for
numbers.
You personally, though.
Yeah.
Because you go to the beat of your own drum. Like your comedy special, just an example. And as a comedian, watching you do that and it being like, oh my gosh, it's Steve Martin again. Like it's even like. Not even saying replicating Steve Martin, but like how Steve Martin put forth almost his big thing was getting a laughter out of absence and not telling the audience when to laugh, but letting them decide when to laugh.
Yeah.
Your specials are doing the same thing in that it's not like here's the structure that it becomes predictable. You've really created almost your own genre.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's probably what's more personal is more universal. I don't know what's universal, but it's like I never felt like I was speaking to the universe. You know what I mean? I felt like I was speaking to people that kind of immediately related to me personally. Mm-hmm. So, but it was a long thing of finding out that, I think that my answer would be there is nothing specific that is not relatable to people, to other people. Like there's no situation that can't be understood by someone else. Because I thought, literally at the time when I felt like I was the only one in the country, like being a 24-year-old touring comic, whatever, and I found everyone understood what I was going through. Really, truly. I was so self-obsessed that I thought I was the only one that could possibly understand this. But it's all, again, it's all the same thing.
So basically no one's special.
Yeah, truly. Feel fear and sadness and happiness, they're all the same. They all feel the same. It doesn't matter what situation you're in.
As long as there's an emotional connection to whatever you're doing, that's what'll people.
And that's the only thing to connect to, I think. Yeah. And the only thing that's actually ever happening is like, you know what I mean? You're nervous or you're scared or you're excited. And you could be excited because you just won the World Series. You could be excited because you just cashed a coupon. You mean it could be any, you know, but like, so if you lead with the emotion, or at least people will latch on to that as much as, you know, they won't go, oh, I've worn a red sweater. You know what I mean? It's much more like, oh, I've had that look on my face.
Yes.
You know?
Perfect. Well, I have to say thank you both for taking the time out to
do this.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for very
absolutely amazing. The movie bravo. Seriously.
I appreciate it.
I was connected from the opening shot. So well done.
Awesome. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
A lot more good things to come. And before we get out of here, is there anything else either of you want the world to know?
Meh.
You know what? That seems good to me.
Yeah.
Meh.
Meh.
Meh. Just meh. Cool.
That is actually our summation of the internet and everything.
That sounds like
meh.
Really, truly, like, we don't know. I mean, we can sit here and talk about stuff, but the movie is really supposed to be like, we want to make a movie about the internet that wasn't instructive, that wasn't talking down to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We think it's a really confusing time to be alive, and hopefully this movie is just a reflection of that confusion, not a, TED Talk.
You nailed it. It's educational and entertaining, so kudos.
Appreciate it.
Thank
bro.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
No problem.
That
was
fun.
I hope you. I know you've done a lot of interviews today. I hope that one.
It was nice.
It was really nice. If you guys could you just autograph these show notes?
For sure.
Keep all of them.
Oh, you do. Is that? Oh no. I thought that was a K.
What?
I thought that was a K. I thought you were doing your middle initial.
Oh no. Not that fancy.
Very fancy. Very nice. Thank you guys so much.
Make my signature.
Cool, thanks for having us.
Oh, of course. I tried to make an interview that you probably haven't heard over and over again.
Yeah, it was great.
Get that chair out of the chair.
Well, there you have it, Hot Breath-a-Verse. If you have not seen 8th Grade yet, do yourself a favor and go see it. You will not be disappointed. It is truly one of the best movies I've ever seen, and I'm not exaggerating on that. So I hope you enjoyed this interview. I had a blast doing it and learned a lot along the way. My favorite part was probably all the cool audition tips that he shared and Elsie shared in her experience. I just love the behind-the-scenes details, and that's what I'm all about, and I love learning about those, which is really what inspired me to even start this podcast. So thank you for being a part of this. And speaking of details, for all my audiophiles listening, if you did hear a clicking or picking sound throughout this audio, it was because while one was talking, the other was actually picking at the microphone. They said they were the Shining twins. It was really cool to see the parallels that they had, even just in mannerisms. If you'd like to see them, this is available on YouTube as well. If you did enjoy it, I would love to hear what you enjoyed. Reach out to me on social media, at Hot Breath Pod on Instagram and Facebook, on Twitter as well, at Joel Byers Comedy, also on all social media. But I would love to interact with you and see what you enjoyed, what we could maybe incorporate into future episodes. I did mention in the intro that I am starting an online podcast course. I have started it. And if you are interested in starting your own podcast, even if you don't take the course, I would say start a podcast, because it has brought so many new opportunities and experiences for me, like this interview you just heard. But if you want to start building your own podcast and you'd like to take the course, it's linked in my show notes. And there's also a discount coupon code where you can get $10 off if you just check it in the show notes. It'll also be linked from my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. But overall, if you did enjoy this and you found it valuable and you want to share it with people, iTunes review go a long way, subscribing as well, and just getting us more visibility on iTunes, but also just telling someone. If you know someone who's a fan of Bo Burnham, if you know someone who's a fan of comedy, if they're a fan of podcast, if they're just a fan of being your friend, share this with them. Let them know about it. Let them know that we out here, as we say in the Hot Breath of Verse. But let's go ahead and land this plane. Your time is very valuable, and I've taken up enough of it. But I do truly appreciate you spending your valuable time with me here. So that being said, if you want to see me live every Wednesday at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia, I'm hosting my live podcast where comedians perform and then get interviewed. If you're not in Atlanta, you can go to my website to check out my schedule. I'll be in LA August 4th through 11th. If you're going to be out there, I'll be doing some shows. Keep up with me there on my website and my schedule. I'll be doing shows at the Laugh Factory and Comedy Store while there, so maybe I'll see you around. But that being said, as I said that being said for the second and now third time of that being said, it is time, hot brethren and sistren,
to dismount. So I'll thank my engineer, Amon Garner, for always keeping my audio sounding crystal clear. And thank you to my wife, Erin Byers, who made the theme song for this podcast. And for our own podcast, we started called Byers Life, if you're interested. But I am forever indebted for thanking her finally in all of my over 140 Hot Breath episodes. So, go forth, go funny, and until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot breath.
All right, have fun out there.
Thank you, bro.
Appreciate it. Did you want the tomato or banana?
Oh, you know what?
This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.